Greetings, this is Cindy Kennedy, and I'd like to invite you to subscribe to the podcast series at www.livingwithlyme.us. This will keep you up to date on all our new releases. Living with Lyme podcast guests may be discussing very controversial topics. The information contained in these podcasts are from the guests' personal experiences and are their own opinions. These podcasts are intended for information. The opinions expressed are solely the guest's own. Please discuss treatment options with your personal healthcare providers before changing or adding treatments. Enjoy the podcast.
Living with Lyme is brought to you in part by Dr. Inspired Formulations, a supplement company offering products such as liposomal artemisinin, liposomal oregano oil, and mimosa pudica. Patients can purchase without a prescription, and practitioners can open a wholesale account and carry the products in their office. To learn more, visit drinspiredformulations.com. That's drinspiredformulations.com. We'd also like to thank Hopkinton Drug. Many people have unique healthcare needs that mass-produced pharmaceutical medications just can't meet. That's why more people turn to Hopkinton Drug, a locally based compounding and wellness pharmacy. Whether it's Lyme disease, mold illness, thyroid, hormone replacement therapy, pediatrics, or dermatology, Hopkinton Drug's specially trained and licensed pharmacists can create customized compounded medications to meet your specific needs. Shipping is available nationwide. Go to rxandhealth.com. That's rxandhealth.com. Or call 800-439-4441. Hopkinton Drug, compounds with care.
Hi, everyone. This is Cindy Kennedy, and I am with Pi Ware. Pi Ware is an editor and a director. He's also an Emmy an Emmy-winning filmmaker who has a lot of things that he has put out across different genres. He's also a director, and he's been part of Solitude, My Beautiful Me, and The Act. And he's also been the editor of The Fastest Car and some other comedies and part of World of Dance and American Idol, all kinds of crazy stuff. But what we have him here to do today is to talk about his recent documentary called Deep Skin, Skin Deep, backwards there. And it's the battle over Morgellons, which is, I hear it pronounced Morgellons and Morgellons, so we'll find out which way he prefers. But this is interesting because this is a whole different take than we're used to, and we're real excited to have him on the show here. So, hi, Pi.
Hi, Cindy. How are you? Thank you for having me on the show. This is great.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, when we met back at iLads, this is something that I don't really see a lot talked about. We talk a lot about Lyme disease, and we talk a lot about, you know, autoimmune that's associated, but I have not talked to anyone about this skin area that is, you know, we assume is affected by Lyme disease. And so is it Morgellons or Morgellons?
I think either way works. I've done a little piece of video on our Facebook page and website about the two different ways that a lot of researchers and scientists will pronounce it. I say Morgellons, but if I'm talking to someone who says Morgellons, then I end up saying Morgellons too. Oh, but either way, okay, is fine.
It's kind of like a potato, potato.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the original, it's a French word, so it's Morgellons. So I think either way is wrong and correct.
Yeah, at the same time. But you know what? We have bigger fish to fry, right, than just figuring out how to say it. We really should find out what to do about it. And how did you get into this? This is kind of a whole different, talk about different genres. This is a crazy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I wanted to make a documentary about denialism. And the reason is because I had an uncle when we were kids who ate baby food at dinner. And we thought that was really strange. And he had this horrible ulcer and it wouldn't go away. They were recommending that he have Freudian analysis to take care of the unconscious reflex between his brain and his stomach that the medical system believed was the cause of ulcers at the time. It was psychosomatic at the time. So he ended up dying of stomach cancer. So I thought that was, you know, this this crazy thing when I heard in the 90s that Barry Marshall, the gastroenterologist from Australia, had found that it was actually a bacterial infection that caused most ulcers, and indeed it caused my uncle's ulcer. And, you know, it just is like a layperson. I'm not a scientist, so I thought science should be easy. It should be black or white. There shouldn't be these crazy areas of gray. We should just agree or disagree. Why would new evidence not be accepted? It's this kind of denialism that exists in science that was fascinating to me. And it happened also when I was at the University of Virginia and was told that there was a new phenomenon that needed to be exposed as a fraud. And it was this thing called global warming. And, you know, that turned out later to be another type of denialism. So when I saw Morgellons disease, which I had seen just researching chronic Lyme disease, I thought, well, this is the most extreme example of denialism, where you have actual, you know, fibers coming out of the skin of the patients, and yet the medical industry says that's either not there, it's in their imagination, or if there are fibers, they're definitely textile fibers, and that's the end of the story. These people have a psychological disease. It's not biological.
Yeah, so somewhere in there, because I was very fortunate to be able to watch the whole documentary, someone actually asked the person if they were scrubbing their skin, right, with material.
Well, one of the main subjects of the film is Cindy Casey. And what's interesting is she went to doctors in the 90s with these lesions that were appearing on her skin, and they found fibers in her skin. And they're like, are you using a washcloth? And she said, no. And they just were astounded and confounded by these fibers that were in her skin that they found, that wasn't even something that she approached them with. So there's some crazy stories. There's one story that's not in the film, but was one of the subjects, where she had a biopsy taken because she had these horrible lesions on her face. And the doctors found a fiber in the biopsy and said, well, now we know you're crazy because you must have implanted this fiber in your skin. That's the only way it could have gotten.
How is that? Yeah, it is possible. You know, there's got to be, I don't know, I just find the majority kind of follow the people who are saying certain things that they, you know, maybe it's Dr. John Smith and, oh, he's extraordinary, he's brilliant, and everybody follows him. And if he says boo, everybody else says boo. But it takes a lot to step out of that, that mess that we've made in medicine, to say, wait a minute, guys, I'm gonna go against the majority of you people, and I'm gonna look at this a little bit more directly and find out what the association is. I mean, the people in the film I found to be extremely. I feel devastated for them. That's exactly the way, you know, when let's talk a little bit about the artsy stuff. You know, when you do this, you want to make an impact. And I have to say, even though with my knowledge, you still made an impact. I mean, the emotion that was there, the real people, the real issues. And, you know, I don't want to give it all away, but that segment of the mainstream doctor just, it angered me to the point where I was growling a bit. How did you find all of this? You know, how was your whole experience doing this?
Well, it's interesting. There's this idea of, what's a good doctor, right? So one of the dermatologists that appears in the film ends up going to the Morgellons conference in Austin. Now, the Morgellons conference is attended by mostly Morgellons researchers and patients themselves. And this particular dermatologist was very skeptical of Morgellons disease, and he presents his own take on it. And it's a crazy scene, because he gets a lot of blowback from the population, and you see the limits of his people skills, you know, his bedside manner,
you think?
It explodes.
You think?
Yeah. So there's this, you know, he says there's no such thing as a bad doctor, right? And so the idea of what is a good doctor is ever present in the film. I interviewed, when I first began shooting, before I'd even actually rolled the first camera, I went and I talked to a friend who's a neuropsychiatrist, and I asked him what he thought about these sorts of diseases, and he said, well, they're all psychosomatic, all these chronic Lyme disease and fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue, and there is no Lyme disease, for example, in California, is what he said. And this is October 2015 when I had the conversation. And what he did is remember, like a good doctor, his training, but his training was in the early 1980s, when that was that assertion was correct, probably, right? But now we were in 2015, and even the local news had reported years before that on the presence of Borrelia burgdorferi, the causative agent of Lyme disease, existing in the ticks within Calabasas and the Santa Monica Mountains here in Los Angeles. So all he had to do was simply do the first step of investigation to find out that there is Lyme disease in California, particularly in the Bay Area. And he wouldn't have said that thing, but he holds a position of authority. He's a neuropsychiatrist. He's a doctor. He's a genius. We all know this. And so, like you said, if Dr. John Smith says boo, we all say boo. And I think there's a way that doctors, they remember their training, they remember the textbooks, but then things evolve. And so when they're remembering and spouting off their textbooks, whether it's, you know, bacteria cannot exist in the gut because it's a sterile environment, like the medical industry used to believe in the 1970s, whether it's there's no Lyme disease in California, they're out of date, and they need to look further and investigate to see what's changed or how we understand things to be different. Because no one now actually thinks that the gut is a sterile environment where bacteria can't exist as they did in the 1970s. You pick up a yogurt in the dairy aisle, and that'll tell you all about the different types of bacteria that exist in the gut. So things have shifted, right?
Yeah, and people think probiotics are just something fancy schmancy for the most part. They don't understand that it's a creation, and it is microbes, so that you can assist the gut to get in order. You know, I always talk about the gut as, you know, if people are really in dysbiosis or, you know, not harmony. I always talk about it as kids playing in the sandbox, right? And you got a bunch of kids and everybody's okay. And then all of a sudden you get some bullies, and the bullies are throwing sand so much that the good guys are leaving, and then they take over. So it's so important to have more good guys and kind of crowd out the bullies so that the gut works better. But I mean, a lot of these people did not come to the table having, you know, a diagnosis of Lyme, correct?
Yes, a lot of them haven't. So just to back up a bit and kind of define Morgellons disease for your listeners, it's basically all the symptoms of Lyme disease, your migratory joint muscle pain, brain fog, fatigue, flu-like symptoms. And on top of those symptoms, you'll also get lesions on the skin and fibers growing out of the skin, embedded in the skin, right? So that's the working definition of Morgellons disease. And about 6% of all Lyme disease patients get those symptoms manifesting in their bodies. So if you get 300,000 cases of Lyme disease every year, that's about 18,000 new cases of Morgellons disease. And I'm sorry, what was your question? When I stopped to define it, I forgot what you asked me.
I don't know.
So you asked if originally Ginger Savely, Dr. Savely, she found in a lot of her Lyme disease patients, they were reporting these fibers in their skin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So some people come to understand that they have Morgellons disease through a Lyme literate doctor when they report these symptoms. And some start with the symptoms of Morgellons disease and find through the connection that you can find online and then some research papers that have been published in peer-reviewed journals, that there is this connection. And then they'll go, oh, okay, well, I'll get tested for Lyme disease. And then they'll find out they have Lyme disease, which is actually very interesting if you think about it, because Morgellons disease is actually easier to detect than Lyme disease in many ways, since it has fibers that are embedded in the skin and that feeling that comes along with it, which is the itchy, the prickly, the sometimes biting, stinging sensation within the skin that accompanies the disease. So I know a few people who found out they had Lyme disease through getting these symptoms of Morgellons, and then the testing led them to Lyme disease and to treatment. And many times that treatment can be successful.
You know, it's one thing feeling lousy and not knowing why, but I can't imagine having these lesions and sores, and those have to be, you know, they're open. These are not like little scratches or anything like that. They can be pretty deep and wide, and it has to be horribly painful. I mean, how do you shower? How do you dress yourself? I mean, all of these things. And, you know, with the description of what people go through, yeah, it becomes more of a psychological issue because of the emotions you're going through. And the problem finding that person to believe what you have is real. And the delay in finding it and the delay in treatment, it just goes on and on. And, you know, a lot of the people are labeled as pickers, you know, and they're just picking their skin. Whoa. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, some of the people that have it in areas you can't pick. So what do? You have a picker by proxy, somebody else comes and picks you. It was tough. That it's tough. It was an eye opener actually for me.
And that's the big problem with the prejudice that exists within the medical and particularly the dermatological communities, right? They're told, oh, Morgellons disease is psychosomatic. Oh, it is a psychological process. And if they have lesions, it's because they're picking at it. And so when someone walks into the office and they have that prejudice, how do you guard against that? Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. How can we, and that was my goal in creating the film. It's to say, hey, everybody, look, here's a bunch of credible patients who have real lesions. They have real fibers coming out of their skin. Here's microscopy to prove that. Here's this credible person's personality. Here, listen to them talk. Here's their story, which you can follow along and empathize with. So I'm trying to turn the tide of prejudice into one of open-mindedness within the dermatological and the medical communities. And hopefully we can do that with an emotional and somewhat exciting and interesting documentary.
Right. You know, they learn that these fibers or filaments, when they took them out, were not from a textile origin. Isn't
right.
I mean, why wouldn't you really believe that?
Well, that's the question. So if there's evidence, say, that bacteria exist in the gut and they're creating ulcers, and there's a gastroenterologist who's publishing these things, why wouldn't it be believed by the wider medical system? And the same thing follows with Morgellons disease. If researchers like Marianne Middleveen are doing research where they're getting samples, or Randy Wymore from Oklahoma State University are taking samples of Morgellons fibers from the skin of patients and then doing analysis of that, and it's not a textile fiber, and it turns out to be made of collagen and keratin, which are proteins created by the body, why wouldn't we believe that? That's a great question. That's the million-dollar question. And I think the film tries to present that question in a way that will hopefully move the conversation forward. And, you know, it's, on the other hand, it's easy to, I don't want to dismiss people who may not believe that this is a real disease. There are good reasons why a dermatologist might think, oh, all the fibers are textile, because there are fibers that do exist on the skin that are textile fibers. That is a real thing. But if you look at the actual fibers within the skin that are embedded and you do an analysis of them, which, you know, Marianne Middleveen did, the researcher who dyed the tissue to find out that there are bacteria present and that the coloration of the blue fibers within the skin is melanin and not a commercial dye, which would be the case if it was a textile fiber. You know, this is a lot of compelling evidence. And what I think needs to happen is that other scientists and other researchers that aren't in this group of folks that I followed in the movie need to repeat those experiments and see what results they get. Because once that happens and they start getting the same results, doing the same experiments on the same types of fibers from the same types of patients, that's when the wider medical community will start to believe the evidence.
Yeah, it's true. Comparatively, in your past, certainly you were involved with things, you know, like Dancing with the Stars and American Idol and things that are completely different from this, but is this a passion of yours now to really kind of bridge that gap between things that are unknown or denied and bringing it forward? Is this your mission?
It was for this particular project. It just, I've made narrative films before, like you'd mentioned this film Solitude or The Act. Those were stories that had empathy at the heart of them, and it had love at the heart of the theme. But when I found this subject, it just kind of drew me into it. And I thought, I've been making and editing a lot of nonfiction, whether it be, you know, American Idol or America's Got Talent, or documentaries like The Last Animals about poaching. I thought, well, I this is a really interesting nonfiction subject that I've got in front of me. I'm just going to follow through and make this documentary. So I think the through line is that I wanted to create something that had empathy. So the same kind of themes that I'd done in the narrative work, I wanted to bring to this documentary, right? Where it's about real people, real emotion. It's about engaging an audience and showing them that we need to take an empathetic look at this situation and have an emotional reaction in believing them.
How much did you get drawn into this?
Well, when you shoot for 5 years, and you know, you're directing and you're the sort of the engine that pushes the film forward, you're drawn in. You know, it's very all encompassing. I wanted to make sure, one of the things I did when I was making the film is that I wanted to show the Morgellons community what I was up to make sure that they followed along and were supportive of the effort. Because really, the big challenge when you're making a film is to gain access to a community that may be marginalized, and in this particular case has been ridiculed, has been abandoned. And so I met with Cindy Casey, who runs the Morgellons disease conference in Austin every year. She and her foundation, the Charles E. Holman Morgellons Disease Foundation, create this conference in Austin every year, although it's canceled this year due to the coronavirus, like most conferences. So I gained her trust with a bunch of conversations that we had, and she sort of introduced me and to the Morgellons disease community. And they, because they trust Cindy, then allowed my cameras to come in and film them at the conference. And also they would tell me their stories, you know, and that was the big deal. You know, I wanted to gain the trust. And then once that was gained, I wanted to show them what I was up to. So I would create, because I'm an editor, I would create sort of 5, 10, 15 minute pieces along the way and show them to the audience, show them to the Morgellons disease community, and go out to them and say, hey, we don't have a budget for this film. No one really wants to give this film any money, any grants, that's because, you know, the popular belief is that it's a delusional disorder and not a biologically based infection. So guys, can you please help us? And we did a Kickstarter campaign to raise a budget. And, you know, the Morgellons disease community, to its credit, was right there with me. And I mean, I had people who were very ill, who couldn't work, sending me $5 and $10 to say, please share our stories with the world. Tell them what's going on. Tell them how we're suffering and how we're not believed. And so I would keep them in the loop. And when I finished the 90-minute version, which is the feature film that's coming out on March 31st, I wanted to find a distributor, right? Because the most important thing is to change the prejudice within the greater community, within the world. And so we needed a distributor who would understand, one, that this is an important issue within the healthcare system that needs to be talked about, even though it's not as prevalent as, you know, COVID-19 right now, which is taking all the headlines. This is still something that needs to be talked about because people are really suffering and need help. And it had to be a distributor who had a wide reach. So I found Gravitas Ventures, and they immediately were interested and will release the 90-minute film on the 31st of March.
Tell me, okay. They're going to be distributing. What's their role? Mm-hmm. Tell me again, Gravitas.
So, Gravitas Ventures is a distribution company, and they license and acquire material and then release it on iTunes and Amazon, Google Play.
Okay.
Sometimes they'll release it in the theaters. Obviously, we're not releasing in the theaters in the middle of the coronavirus epidemic, but we are, selling DVDs and Blu-rays, and video on demand for people who have cable as well. It'll be it'll be available. And so there, Gravitas is an organization that has the infrastructure set up. So as a filmmaker, I have the infrastructure just to go and shoot things and edit things, but I don't really distribute. So we partner with allies like Gravitas, so that the message can get out there, right? And we hope to, you know, be licensed by a big streamer like Hulu, or in particular Netflix, which is the great streamer that everybody has. You know, a lot of folks, like if we were on HBO, you know, there's a lot of family members and patients who have Magellans who don't have subscriptions to these types of premium content. So we're working hard to get onto Netflix and or a similar streamer that has a lot of reach throughout the world.
What I wanted to say is it just takes a village.
We'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors. Botanical medicines are an important part of the Integrative Lyme Disease Program. Biocidin from Biobotanical Research is a professional strength broad-based program that has been extensively researched for effectiveness as nutritional support in Lyme and co-infections. Ask your practitioner about Biocidin LSF and visit biocidin.com. Master Supplements specializes in probiotic enzymes and fiber that support digestion. Their products provide results that you can feel working within 60 days or a money-back guarantee. Their staff is available to help you decide which products and programs are right for you. Visit master-supplements.com or call 800-926-2961 for more info.
Now, what's your Facebook page? Can you let us know what that is? Because I do want people to keep in touch.
Absolutely. So all of our social media is Morgellons Movie. So it's Morgellons Movie. So if you go online, you can go to morgellonsmovie.org or morgellonsmovie.com. Both of them work. If you go to Facebook, it's facebook.com/morgellonsmovie, instagram.com/morgellonsmovie, and Twitter @morgellonsmovie.
Oh, good, good, good. Because I don't want to leave that till the very end, because then sometimes I'm like, oh, come back and see, listen to it. Oh, wait a minute, I have one more question. cut. You know, everybody has the best and the worst. So either on an emotional level or, you know, kind of any kind of feel, well, that is feelings is emotion, Cindy, but anything. Tell me your best experience with this movie, and then let us know what the worst experience was. What did you walk away saying, oh my God, this was great, and oh my God, this was horrible?
Well, with Morgellons disease, I guess some of the best surprises were how resilient many of these patients are, right? So you have Morgellons disease patients who are ridiculed by the media as just being crazy and should be ignored. They're told by their physicians that, no, I'm not going to examine you. I already know what's wrong with you. Here's an antipsychotic. Go see a psychiatrist. They're told by family members, I looked this thing up on the internet and you're crazy and I'm not going to support you being crazy. So they're abandoned. And that they still, many of these folks still fight for their rights as patients, for the rights as people, and stand up and have conferences, that stand up, organize, and do marches at the Texas State Capitol. That was inspiring to me, to see the resilience within the community. And the flip side, honestly, was the thing that really horrified me. It was the fact that that patients who have Morgellons disease are 800 times, not 8 or 80, but 800 times more likely to die by suicide than the regular population. And within my time of shooting, I think about 6 or 7 suicides with the folks that we were shooting with happened.
Yeah, that's, oh.
It was really horrifying to see.
You knew them, you met them.
Mm-hmm. And it was horrifying to see all that. And what that did, Cindy, is instill in me a really important goal with the film, which was to send a message of hope to the patients who are going to watch this film and to the family members of the patients who are going to watch this film. Because the cause of suicide seems to be loss of hope. And if we can give hope to the world, because there is hope, and if we can give it to the world, then we're going to change the world for the better. Maybe a little bit, but that's still for the better. And so that became a really important part of the film, was to show, okay, we can change people's minds. And once the belief starts to change and the prejudice starts to change, then folks will start doing the science that's going to find the cause and agree with the researchers that have found that these fibers are made of collagen and keratin. And then treatment, hopefully, will start to become more prevalent. And, you know, there can be a success story like there was in the film with one of the patients we followed. There was an unqualified success story where treatment solved his Morgellons disease. It cured it. I would say 90%. You know, it's a lot like Lyme disease, where there's a lot of people getting better with treatment, but not a ton of people getting 100% better. It seems to be 80-90%, you know, which is
collateral damage. Founding. That's what I say all the time. It's the collateral damage that has occurred. And yeah, it's hard sometimes to dig out of that. You know, what you did and the, you know, is it karma? Is it, you know, something good has got to come back to you for pursuing this, because of the, you know, the, we don't know how many people truly have it, because there are people out there that really don't know. And I hope that, you know, through the way we communicate nowadays, and people, you know, there's Morgellons people, Facebook pages, and, you know, there are people out there that are going to get a hold of this. They're going to talk about it. They're going to tell family. They're going to tell friends. Somebody's going to know somebody. And yeah, you know, the way I look at it, you know, things are handled so differently. You think about even in a community, you know, you present, oh gosh, you know, Sandy Smith here. Everybody's a Smith if you didn't figure that out by now. Sandy Smith has got, you know, a cancer. Oh my God, you know, then the meal trains happen and everybody's like, can I take your kids? And oh my God, let me get you something. Do you need groceries? And you know, everybody's got all this stuff happening. I'll get your meds. I'll take you to the doctor. I'll bring you to your chemo or radiation treatments, whatever. You tell somebody you have Lyme disease and it's getting better. It is getting better because more and more people are talking about it. And, you know, but still, it's the length of time. Maybe it took years to get diagnosed. Maybe, you know, it took even longer than a few years to start to feel better. And, you know, people look at you and they think, God, what is wrong? You know, get your crap together. You're going to be fine. Just you got a bad attitude. And that kind of stuff just doesn't help. It hurts people. And again, by bringing hope to people and getting that community together is important, because I think I learned that in the beginning of their little conferences, it was a very handful of people, but it had grown during the time that you were filming. Wasn't that correct?
Yeah, it grew a little bit during the time of filming. Hopefully the film can be a part of the community growing even beyond that, you right. know, because like you say, it's the support system. When the world doesn't believe in something, and they think chronic Lyme disease is fake, or they think that Morgellons disease isn't real, quote unquote, then the support system isn't there, right? You talk about cancer. I've had friends, while I've been shooting this film, I've seen people get Morgellons disease and have zero support from their family, from their friends, to lose family and friends, to lose jobs. I've seen people have their kids taken away in divorce proceedings because they were used. Morgellons disease was believed to be a kind of delusional disorder, so it was proof that they were unfit as parents. And then I've had two friends get cancer. And like you say, the meal trains are there because the support system, because the belief around the community and in the United States is that we need to reach out when someone has cancer and give them support. That's the feeling. That's the emotion that surrounds a cancer diagnosis, which is different from it was in the 1950s, right? When the C word was something you wouldn't say. And slowly, as you say, Cindy, the chronic Lyme disease is starting to be more and more supportive. Why is that? It's because of the exposure that the disease gets within the media. And that starts to change people's belief and in conversations between folks. And the same needs to happen for Morgellons disease. It's all the same thing that happened you know, with ulcers. It was believed that this was a psychosomatic and you really needed to stop being angry and you needed to get Freudian analysis, and that was your problem. You're the problem. It's victim blaming, not an infection.
Yeah, they don't
know. It's a interesting reflex. You see it over and over again of victim blaming, right? It's like, as a doctor, if someone comes into my office and they say all these things that don't sound right, I'm like, problem must be you. And that kind of instinct is prevalent throughout human nature. So I don't want to go and put a target on doctors and dismiss them and say, you guys are stupid. You should have known about Morgellons disease. That's not what we're up to. It's empathy on both sides of the equation, right? This is Morgellons disease is a complicated disease. Okay. It shares symptoms with psychological diseases from the, delusions of parasitosis, right? So people who believe that they have bugs in their skin will scratch at their skin. They'll have this formication. They'll have this feeling of biting, stinging sensations within their skin, and then they will scratch and pick at their skin. And that can look similar to the Morgellons disease symptoms. So, okay, if that's a prejudice in your head as a dermatologist that this is a psychological disease and then you see symptoms that are similar, you might go to that conclusion. So there are reasons why folks jump to conclusions. And I want to be empathetic to that. But I also want to say, I understand why you would think that. Here's why you should look further.
Right.
This is why we should look beyond a prejudice and open our eyes to new evidence and new diseases that are emerging.
Yeah, you know, I recently had a conversation with a family practice doctor who just didn't really want to have anything to talk about, you know, conversation about Lyme disease, because Lyme disease is a bacteria. Okay. All right. Yeah, I agree. And you take antibiotics and like any other bacteria, it kills it. And that's it. The rest of this stuff that's going on, you know, I don't believe in it. How do you, I mean, you got, it's.
And it comes down to belief.
Yeah.
It comes down to belief. That's stopping the progress of treatment is the belief.
But I think some of it is ignorance. I just have to
say,
you know, it's easier to say no than to really pick up some research material and sift through it and talk about it and open the discussion with your peers, because you might be exiled. Somebody might say, you know, he's flipping his lid over there. He's really doesn't know what he's talking about. You know, I want to just touch up, you know, as I practiced women's health for 20 some odd years. So I was always concerned about people's self-perception. Mm-hmm. So on multiple levels, these men and women who are dealing with this illness and these obvious sores that can be on their face, it can be in areas that, you know, people don't see, but it can also be just totally exposed and right out there. The embarrassment, the, you know, what people are looking at you and what are they thinking? And it's got to be difficult to just kind of lead a quote unquote normal life. I mean, granted, you feel lousy and you really don't want to, but, you know, going to work if you're able, going out to the grocery store, doing these things and constantly feeling like people are looking at you and looking at you with that eye. You know, it's not even like, oh, what happened? It's more like, ooh, what's wrong with you? You know, or are you contagious? People are like, ew! Talk about the coronavirus that we're dealing with right now. But that body image is so, it can be so destructive to the human person and their feeling of worthiness and, you know, that they can, you know, they can have, you know, just as normal a life as other people. I mean, we should keep that in mind when we're looking at people with this type of issue going on.
Yeah. And it can be tough psychologically on you as well to have all those people look at you and judge you, right? You know, I know that a lot of chronic Lyme patients, when they're not supported, will feel unworthy. And Morgellons disease patients, and this is with Lyme disease patients as well, there's a lot there. What can happen, which it's really interesting, the complexities of the psychological manifestations, right, of Lyme disease or Mogellan's disease, right? So if you have a bacterial infection caused by Borrelia and it reaches your brain tissue, your behavior is going to change because the infection, much like syphilis, will change the brain chemistry and the way the brain works. And so the interesting thing and the complex thing and the thing that folks don't necessarily know or even want to understand because it's complex is that you can have Mogellan's disease, a biological sourced disease, and be delusional at the same time. Why? Because the infection has gotten to your brain, right? So that's the really interesting part, is when I was making the documentary, was to realize, like, well, some of these folks can present in a doctor's office with psychological symptoms, odd behavior, saying unusual things. And that isn't proof that they're mentally ill and should be dismissed. It may be proof that the infection is so bad it's gotten into their brain.
That's a great point. You put a bunch of things together there that, you know, yeah. It is, it's multi-level. It's, you know, that physical, that emotional, it probably impacts your spirituality. Like, what the hell? How'd this happen to me? What did I do in my previous life to get that? And to have loss of friends and family and people walk away, to lose your children over this. Wow. You know, what could be worse?
I don't know. But it's bad for a lot of folks. There's situations obviously are very different from one another, but you know, it gets so bad, as we said, that folks lose hope and there's a lot of suicide within the community. You know.
Do you find that after doing this and showing this to this group of people, do you feel like it helped elevate their hope that the community will come forward and say, yes, this is something we all need to back. We need to get our physicians on board. We need to show them. It's almost like you have to carry a satchel of evidence, right? You have to keep, you know, okay, here's a slide. I'm going to show you the fibers. Okay, here's the analysis. I want you to read that. Okay, now here's the studies. Here's some studies. And, you know, they may say, oh, you only have 250 subjects in this study. You need, you know, a mega study of 100,000 people to make that worthwhile. And they, you know, kind of push it away. But it almost seems like you're sometimes having to educate your caretakers, not only your family, your friends, but also your healthcare people.
And, absolutely.
And some of those people are just not willing to take that information. They, I don't know. I love information, you know, not all the information is created equal. We know that, but.
Well, that's funny. I mean, you know, Dr. Savely says in the film that she was excited when she found this new disease emerging. She thought, oh my God, I'm going to present this to the dermatologist and they're going to be so interested in something new in their field. And she found that they really weren't. And, you know, eventually the CDC, well, it's a great question. Why do people not have curiosity within their own field? I don't know.
I can't deal with anything more than melanoma and psoriasis right now. Oh, a little seborrheic keratosis. I can try to figure that out too, but it's, I don't know.
I mean, the complexities might overwhelm somebody. But you know, once you get the information out there, the complexities don't seem so overwhelming, right? I think the problem is, one of the problems is having, there was a study, right? The CDC did a study from 2008 to 2012 on Mogellan's disease, right? And a lot of folks will say, well, if the CDC did a study, then I believe it. There's no way it could be flawless. It could be flawed. Are we still on? Okay.
We got you.
Technical difficulties. We're okay.
Well, you should be able to fix that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I edit. I should be a good IT guy. All right, we're good. So as I was saying, you know, if the CDC does a study, doctors will believe it, right? Well, I think one of the benefits of the horrible coronavirus pandemic that's happening now is that folks can see that the CDC has made mistakes. They're human. It's run by human beings. And that the CDC isn't 100% correct 100% of the time. They usually do great work, but sometimes they make mistakes like everybody else. And they made a big mistake when they did the Morgellons disease study, and that they defined the population incorrectly. So the people they studied, the population they studied, weren't defined by the fibers embedded in the skin. They were defined by the belief of fibers in the skin. So there were 12 people, only 12 people that actually had samples taken from their skin. None of the samples taken from their skin was embedded in the skin, okay? So when they did tests and it seemed like those were textile fibers, well, that's the reason why.
Okay. Yeah.
So the information needs to be of a higher quality. It needs to not be accompanied with a prejudice going in to the research, which can color your results. It needs to be, the quality of the research needs to be very open-minded and very strict.
Right. Because there were a lot more people that had started off in that study, and it kind of whittled down to a smaller group. And it's unfortunate that that group was the ones that really did not have any of the fibers within their tissue there. Because I'm sure some of the other people that weren't involved or ended up not becoming involved were really the true people.
Yeah, a lot of folks stepped away because they felt like the questionnaire was leading them towards a psychological diagnosis. So if you talk to a lot of the folks involved who were advising the CDC, they were like, well, it's clear that they have a prejudice that this is a psychological disorder.
Wow.
When they were going into the research. So
do you walk around now looking at people's skin?
I do. I do. And it's interesting, just as a, you know, I'm not a scientist. I don't like blood or, skin diseases as a person. I'm not interested in that.
I tell you it's too late.
I mean, now I'm very interested in Morgellons disease, obviously, but you know, in a grocery store, for example, you know, 7 years ago, if someone had skin lesions, I would not look at them and I would try to shy away from them, just recoil just naturally. That was my instinct. And now after having studied this, I really empathize with them. As you said, body image can be really tough if you're suffering from, if you have lesions on your skin and you're feeling unworthy or you're feeling insecure and people are staring at you. I try to just offer an empathetic and loving glance towards these folks, you know what I mean? And I'm also interested in like why, you know, right, they might have lesions. So my attitude towards people with skin lesions has changed entirely. And I hope that the film can also help people be more empathetic to folks that might have skin lesions, because we don't know the story behind that.
No.
And
it doesn't make
they may need
dirty,
our help.
Right? It doesn't make them dirty.
No.
No.
Not at all.
Wow.
You look at Cindy Casey, and you know, she's a nurse practitioner, right? Yeah. She is she worked in ICU and like they were doing heart transplants. So she's somebody who's very credible in that field. And, you know, we went to her house and it's obviously a lovely home in Texas. You look at Edward Hu, another subject who had Morgellons disease, and he was a federal prosecutor for San Francisco. So he is obviously someone incredibly intelligent and very professional who got Morgellons disease. This isn't a disease of folks who are quote unquote dirty or drug addicts or homeless who can't be trusted. This is a disease that can affect everybody and indeed affects Joni Mitchell, the singer. There's no boundaries of whom this can affect.
Right. And, you know, there are probably people out there that have it and do not know they have it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are people that just don't go, you know, to have it evaluated. They just kind of live with it. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you do know someone that is suffering from something that's topical like that, you know, throughout their skin, whatever, you just might want to reach out and find a good resource to get that person evaluated, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I would recommend that they see a Lyme literate doctor.
Yeah.
And also a good place to do a lot of the research on Morgellons disease is morgellonsdisease.org. It's run by the Charles E. Holman Foundation, which is Cindy Casey's organization that I mentioned.
Right. And these people that he's talking about are the people that are in the film. And, you know, I can't wait to hear more about what people's response to Skin Deep is going to be. And, you know, for people who are listening and they're listening late, we're in March and it'll come out at the end of this month, 31st, and we're in 2020. I can't believe it. When I was a kid, 2020, we should be driving around spaceships. I have no idea. I'm still going to be on four tires.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm not on a moon of Jupiter right now. Why am I still on Earth?
I know. I can't understand. I know. Well, we got some good oxygen here. We'll kind of hang out here for a while. But this has been a very unique interview. And you're unfortunately now quite knowledgeable about Morgellons disease. And I guess we could consider you do you want to be an expert or maybe a minor expert, or would you like to be the major expert? You've made contact with such great people who have done great work. And, you know, you can only hope that these people will continue on and do more research and offer more proof to this horrible, horrible condition.
I hope that others will start to do the research as well. That's the goal, right? Yeah. To create treatment for this disease. And, yeah. Know, if things evolve and the greater community begins to research it, as it has happened for Lyme disease and chronic Lyme disease, then, you know, maybe we'll shoot a follow-up film.
Yeah.
About how Morgellons disease is changed and how the world is now supporting patients rather than ridiculing them. That would be a great movie that I would love to make. Yeah,
that would be great. That would be great. Oh, I can't thank you enough for joining me.
Well, thank you so much, Cindy, for having me on.
I love it. I love it. So, you know, for everybody who has been listening, this has been Pieware. And by the way, excuse me, today is Pi Day 3.14.
It is. Exactly. Yeah, my name is spelled PI, and it's Pi Day. I'm sure if I check Facebook, I'm going to have lots of people putting lots of irrational numbers on my Facebook page.
Yeah, actually, my husband said he just pulled your bio off the printer, and he said, "What's Pi-ware? What's a Pi-ware or a Pi-ware?" And I said, "No, his name is Pi-ware." And he said, "Oh my God, how coincidental. Today's 3:14. It's 3.14 is Pi." What does Pi even mean? You know, what does that even mean? But this has been great. I want to thank you again. And I wish you a lot of success with Skin Deep. It'll be out soon. So by the time this podcast comes to the airwaves, it will be out. So definitely take a look at Pi's Facebook page so you can get more information and you can look for it across social media, et cetera. And please share it. Please share this information, because if you share it with a few and they share it with a few, you're probably going to help. You're going to touch lives and you may make a difference. So thank you again, Pi.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Cindy.
You're welcome. For everybody, you've been listening to another episode of Living with Lyme. We're real excited to bring you wonderful experts and wonderful knowledge and keep you filled. So you take care now.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Living with Lyme. We'd like to take another moment to thank our sponsors. Botanical medicines are an important part of an integrative Lyme disease program. Biocidin from Biobotanical Research is a professional strength, broad spectrum formula that has been extensively researched for effectiveness as a nutritional support in Lyme and co-infections. University studies have shown that this combination of plant medicines is also effective on biofilms that may be hampering treatment, as well as providing broadly acting herbal support. The liposomal form of biocidin, called biocidin LSF, is used by Lyme-literate physicians such as Dr. Richard Horowitz and Dr. Jill Carnahan. Ask your practitioner about biocidin LSF and visit biocidin.com for more information. Master Supplements. Does living with Lyme ever get overwhelming and finding the right support seem difficult? Well, Master Supplements can help. Master Supplements specializes in probiotics, enzymes, and fiber that help support digestive and immune health during and after antibiotics. Master Supplements products provide results that you can feel working, with a 60-day money-back guarantee. Their staff is available to help you decide which products and programs are right for you. Master Supplements is dedicated to science-based products with the highest standards of quality control. Visit master-supplements.com for more information or call and talk to a team member at 800-926-2961. That's master-supplements.com or 800-926-2961. Thanks so much again for listening to Living with Lyme. We'd like to remind you that if you have not done so already, please subscribe to the podcast. You can visit our website at livingwithlyme.us so you make sure you don't miss any episodes. Until next time, thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.